Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, mostly the British ones. I'm Eamon Clark. I'm at the Enniskillen Comic Fest and I am with Giles Wright. Hello, Giles.
Hello, Eamon.
Now, you are the inspiration for the five-star club. You are the man who's been there, done that, designed the T-shirt, and he's now wearing the T-shirt.
There are a few of us out there, yes, but I'm delighted that I'm here across the table with you, and we're both wearing the famous five-star Mega City Book Club T-shirt.
Well, actually, no, this is the other T-shirt. I've got the five-star T-shirt. I've got the gym one, like yourself, and I ran park run it this morning. And
now he's going
to, that's me showing off. So, it was a year ago. We were at Lawless. You suggested the T-shirt idea. And now, as you say, there are certain members of the five-star club who've all got a T-shirt. And a few four appearances, people who are after me to arrange their fifth. But anyway, enough of that. You, as ever, are my go-to chap for an eclectic mixture of Judge Dredd stories. This time, if I spoil it slightly, from the Mega Collection. Tell us what we're talking about on the book club today.
We are talking about Mega Collection volume 56, Beyond Mega City 1.
Indeed. So, cover is, that's a Brendan McCarthy cover. Writers, we've got John Wagner, Alan Grant, Garth Ennis, Grant Morrison, Mark Miller, Gordon Rennie. Artist, Brendan McCarthy, Steve Dillon, Dermot Power, Charlie Adlard, and Inaki Miranda. Colours, Wendy Simpson, Chris Blythe, Eva De La Cruz, Tom Frey, Mark King, John Aldrich, Annie Parkas, and Simon Boland did the letters. And as I read now that list, I realise that John Wagner and Garth Ennis probably sitting not all that far from us, which is a stone throw.
Exactly. You could literally throw a stone at either of their tables.
Yeah. So, as ever, we've got a selection of Judge Dredd stories. Let's start with the theme of this collection. What are the sort of, what's the collective theme for this collection of Dredd stories?
Well, as the title Beyond Mega City 1 suggests, we see Dredd taken out of his home city. And he visits various different polities around the world and interacts with different judicial systems. But then beyond that, we have different facets of Dredd. We've got your favorite, Detective Dredd, but we've also got Cultural Ambassador Dredd. We've got Diplomat Dredd. We've got Soldier Dredd. And then we've got, another sort of investigative. Is he a diplomat? He keeps changing his role. So there's all sorts of different aspects of his personality and his job in there within. And there's only five stories. It's not like a huge collection, but really, really interesting. I think they're all good stories. I know there's problems with one of them, but really, and I think the art's really great on all of them. And it's just interesting to go all around the world and see how Dredd interacts with negatively and positively with other judicial systems.
So that sort of leads me to the second question, which you've already started on, which is why this particular theme? Is it that Beyond the Borders of Mega City 1 idea that interested you?
Well, yes. I mean, I'm very happy with Mega City 1. I think the city itself is as good a character as Dredd. I know there was always problems in the first year and a bit of the Dredd strip where he never seemed to be in the city. You know, they took him to the moon, they took him to the cursed earth, they took him here, they took him there. So I'm very happy with that. But yet, nostalgia glasses on, I can still remember how amped I was seeing, well, whatever prog it is, in sort of 1986, the week before Atlantis. And then Tharg's notes were saying, oh, next week we're going to Atlantis. And there was a picture of a Brexit judge. And of course, this is a British comic, and the majority of the readership was British and Irish. So I can remember being, like shaking with excitement that we're going to see, oh, okay, we're not in America anymore. So there is that. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I love Mega City 1, but just the way, once again, the way these stories are put together, they're really interesting. And I just think they're damn good, particularly the last two at the end, Gordon Rennie, who writes two very different stories. He's very serious about exploring what these two systems might be. So, and Wagner does a damn good job. I know you have discussed Emerald Isle which makes up a large part of this collection, with Jamie in detail on a previous episode. But it's really nice that this is Ennis, who had done Dread for about a year, I think, at this point, and he's really flexing. Okay, great. I'm getting freedom. Guess where I'm taking Dread? I'm taking him to Ireland, and it's a, you know, it's a tourist trap, and the city's called Murphyville, and judges drink a couple of pints every night. So, you know, it's great. It's really, really interesting. And like I said in the intro, it's actually the different facets of where we see Dread and what we see Dread doing that's maybe more interesting than the fact that he's in Latin America or North Africa.
So before we get to the stories, we've been sitting in panels this afternoon, particularly talking about the history of Battle, because Ennis Cillin is celebrating the 50th anniversary of Battle. And I was struck by the editors and the writers and so on, this idea that they will create a story, but they're not sure if it'll last more than a few weeks, you know.
Yeah.
So Dread, in the early days of Dread, I guess it would be fair to say that they were somewhat surprised by his success and the success of Mega City One. And it's a British comic, but it's about America. Do you think it was inevitable that at some point the editors and the writers would have to say, well, we need to look beyond the borders of Mega City One? Or do you think, to a certain extent, was it fan-driven? Were there letters saying, I want to see what Britsit looks like?
I would take a guess. So, yeah, when did the Cursed Earth take place? That was quite early,
yeah,
wasn't it? So that was in the first, let's say the second to third years, right on that cusp of the strip. I don't know whether it's fan-driven. I think it's Brendan McCarthy-driven.
Right.
It's that star scan that appeared, well, it's in the back of this collection, isn't it? It appeared in a special, didn't it, where he did a lineup of the world's judges. Is in the front, actually, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah, he did a lineup of the world's judges. And there's a Pan-African judge in there. There's an Antarctic judge in there. There's an Australian judge. And I think that's the picture that launched 1,000 stories. You know, hey, oh, this is a memoir. This, you know, we've been to Luna One, but there's 50 different judicial systems on our doorstep. Let's go and explore them all.
So, okay, so this collection does indeed explore judicial systems beyond the borders of America. I should have asked you this before we pressed record, but do you want to go through, shall we go through the stories in the book, in the order they are in the book?
And I think so. I mean, there's only five of them, you know, so it's not like there's 55 of them. They're in chronological order, which I think would make more sense.
So let us begin with Atlantis from 1986 in black and white, progs 485 to 488, Wagner, Grant, McCarthy. What did you want to say about this story? This is where we really get the idea of Britsit, and we get to look at what the Britsit judges look like, don't we?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is... okay, so, you know, we're going to go into detail of what the Ennis Cillin Comic Con is like later, but at the heart of this year's Comic Con is a room dedicated to Will Simpson. And Will's actually in that room on a desk on his own with just some coffee and cakes and doing sketches. And he's surrounded on all four sides by his work. And one of them is the star scan that I picked as my grail page last time. It's the Dread as the Banana City cop. And I asked Will, I said, hey, listen, how much latitude were you allowed with that costume design? Was it just a blank slate? And he said, yeah, well, back in the day, you were just given, okay, go for it. You know, it's we're in Latin America. Go for it as you please. So I'm guessing Brendan McCarthy was given as much free rein as he wanted with the Britsit uniform. And McCarthy is, if nothing else, the crazy helmet guy. I mean, he's got all sorts of this. Even in this story, there's crazy helmets. In the, you know, the Judder, you know, he goes wild with his helmets. He's always got things going on. So it is wild to see him doing a riff on the tall helmet that the British bobbies wear, that is stands way off the judge's head. Instead of an eagle on the right shoulder, there's a huge lion. The British lawmaster, the Britsit lawmaster, looks incredible. Yeah, lots of heavy blacks. I love the way, so Atlantis is takes place not quite in Britsea. It's in, there's an underwater submarine sort of station that links the two halves of the transatlantic tunnel that joins Britsea with Megacity One. And the way that McCarthy draws it, it just feels like cramped. Like you'd have to maybe duck your head to get into every door. It is almost like you're on a submarine. The apartment of the two antagonists is just a little bit too small. It's just maybe two and a half rooms, and that's it. But yes, the character design of the Britsit judges, their bikes, excellent. It's the usual, perfectly crafted Alan Grant and John Wagner. There's four parts. The first part is the setup of the story. The second part is we see this married couple who straight out, and it's partially told in a diary fashion, epistolary from the one of the couples who just they are obliged to raise a certain amount of creds per month, and she's a waitress in a cocktail bar, and she invites people back to their apartment and murders them.
Yeah.
And a nice Brendan McCarthy touch is every time there is that entry from her diary or the narrator's the narration, it's the block holding the text is in the shape of an eagle, which is like a Megacity One eagle. So yeah, great. McCarthy goes crazy with the haircuts. He goes crazy with the flared trousers. There's people wearing flowers in their hair. There's semi hippies. There's huge manta rays. It's incredible.
And we get an early example of Detective Dredd, as we say.
Yeah.
We also get, I think, perhaps in contrast to what's going to come later in this collection, we get Dredd and the Britsit judges interacting as sort of equals in a way.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, he's not giving them too much nonsense, actually.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. So Atlantis is co-policed by the two cities. But yes, Dredd does not go in and throw his weight around.
No.
He's not really, whether it's because he's not doesn't want the paperwork, but he goes in and he immediately meets a liaison judge, and they just work it together. I'll take this part of the investigation, you take that part, and we'll meet at the end. And they both put in an equal amount of work. Of course, they solve the mystery, and they bring in the bad guy. Yes, there is no throwing his weight around, which is unusual, as we see from the later stories.
Fantastic black and white art. Obviously, I think everybody on this podcast, we're a big fan of black and white art. Some of my favorite Brendan McCarthy, in fact. Yeah, it's just lovely, and it's great. It's a great story. Four parts.
Yeah, right. But super slim.
Yeah. Okay, so a slightly longer story. We come to Emerald Isle, which, as you say, we've already done on the podcast with Jamie Beamish, episode 222. But this is the one where Garth Ennis sends Dredd to the Emerald Isle, literally, which has now become some sort of weird theme park, holiday, Irish, ridiculous thing with, of course, Irish judges. I mean, we won't go into too much detail about this one, but what did you think of this story? And again, what did you take from it in the wider context of Dredd beyond the walls of Megacity One?
Well, my big takeaway this time reading it again, because I don't think I'd read it. And even when you did the episode with Jamie, I don't think I read it at that time, but I can remember what Jamie was talking about, and he really enjoys it. And it's a very good story. And I think it's one of the, I don't think I'm talking out of school when I say that I don't think Ennis really got Dredd for a lot of his career. And Ennis will be the first person to agree with that. He doesn't think he did that well. This is one of the ones where he kind of, maybe he doesn't get Dredd, but it's a damn good story. And yes, there's a lot of gags in there. There's the Irish judges are drinking pints.
Yeah.
There's spud guns. There's, as you say, St. Stephen's Green gets run over. Ha ha ha. But my takeaway reading it this time was just how nasty it is as a story. There's a mob blitzer at the heart of this, who's the chief antagonist that Dredd is going after, who is one of the nastiest bastards I've read. He's, I mean, on three different occasions, he comes into situations, takes hostages, gets what he wants, and then murders the hostages. I mean, he's a horrible, horrible character. And Dredd is a brute in there, probably when the two are interacting with justification of being a brute. But yeah, the sort of Irish independence guys don't have a nice time. It just seems that, you know, a lot of people are just living hand to mouth. So yeah, at the same time as this silliness is going on, it's quite a nasty undercurrent.
Mm.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's just multi-layered as a story. It's crazy.
Steve did an artwork, the famous Judge Dredd lip curl style, coloured by Wendy Simpson. Of course, Will Simpson, as you say, has got his own room today with his art exhibition, and he's there. He's a very delightful fellow. I forgot to ask him about. I don't know if they're still together, actually.
I messaged Paul prior to the con to say, I mean, from a purely selfish point of view, about what I'd be taking. Will Wendy be there? And Paul said, no, Will travels on his own.
Oh, okay.
So,
fair enough. Have a. All right. I mean, Emerald Isle, it's a classic. It's got that famous cover of Dredd and Joyce.
That's been recreated by a certain somebody and a certain somebody.
Well, we stood in front of it and tried to recreate it, yes. I think Jamie was better acting than me, but that, you know, that's fair for Jamie. It's a great story. It is, you know, Ennis, Dylan, Wendy Simpson colours. Quite a colourful story in this reproduction, but yeah, great stuff. All right, let's get to the middle of the book. And we're going to talk about Book of the Dead by Grant Morrison, Mark Miller, and Dermot Power. Give us the setup of this one. And I'm guessing this is the story that, yes.
You guess correctly.
Yeah.
So, yes, a really intriguing setup. Chief Judge Magruder has instituted, or at least signed up to, a cultural exchange program where a judge from Megacity One, in this case, Dredd, gets exchanged for a week with a judge from another megacity. So he gets sent there. One of their top judges gets sent to Megacity One, and hilarity ensues.
Right.
And this is the first time we see Africa. So we're in the city of Luxor, which is on the sides of the city of Luxor that we know today in Egypt, on the Nile. And here we see how they do things on the Nile.
Yeah, okay. So this is 1993. I mean, perhaps I should get to this towards the end of our discussion, but one of the slight problems, and meaning it's not that slight, with the depictions of overseas judges is what we would now look back on as some slight racist stereotypes in early 2000 AD. It's most prevalent in this book, in Book of the Dead, I thought, where the Egyptian or the Luxor judges are shown, I don't know, the violence and their immediate retribution seems a bit strange to me. And of course, they're also played for comedy and laughs a lot of the time, particularly in the final punchline that we're going to lead, the story leads up to. Did that bother you about this one?
So this is, when Alex did his mega epic countdown, whatever it was, two years ago on his blog, the very bottom two are the most despised mega epics, Inferno and Purgatory.
Right.
So let's take those off the table.
Okay.
The next worst one was this.
Right.
Book of the Dead. There's another big blog that does all of, whose name I criminally forget, that is discusses all of the mega collections. And the guy that does the review, he's Australian chap, says much the same thing that you've just said. And every time I hear Book of the Dead talked about, there's always a sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, or at least a sort of eyebrow raising of exactly what you brought up, whether it's, you know, to white Europeans who are talking about Egypt, etc. So yes, there's problematic. Now, I'm going to go off script here.
Oh.
You know I live in the Middle East.
Yeah.
And whilst I don't live in Egypt, I got quite a few Egyptian friends. And over the last couple of years, I've gifted a few of them this collection, and I mean, don't hold it against me. I have Book of the Dead as a standalone. I'm a huge fan of this thing. It just happens to be one of the standalones. I've given the Book of the Dead to 6 or 7 of my Egyptian friends and said, what do you make of this? Is this, you know, in the same way that I might, if I don't think I have any Japanese friends, but yeah, our man in Hondo, is this a thing? And all of them liked it.
Oh, great.
Right.
Okay.
And they, hey, but what about the brutality of the cops? Yeah, the cops are like that. They're the biggest gang in town. What about this? What about the disrespect for the citizens? Yeah, that's why we had a revolution in 2011. The biggest problem any of them had was they said, where's the traffic? Because the right. Cairo, I know, Cairo, Luxor here, but Luxor is effectively a suburb of Cairo, is notorious for traffic, right? So actually, you know, I have that. And once again, I know Miller and Morrison are not from the region. And there are problems with this thing. I think it's kind of slight. I think it's played preposterously. Bits of it are played for laughs. It's not Hill and Willie's to die on, Eamon. I'm not. This is not my one trump card that I'm going to play. But I don't think it's as bad as everybody else does. And the heavy lifting that Dermot Power is doing is with his artwork is quite extraordinary. The costume design of the Egyptian judges is spectacular. The entry into the first time we see Luxor is great. We go deep into a tomb that is you know filled with sand at one point. The tech judges are all wearing Anubis themed helmets. They look great. The big bad looks great. Yeah, there are plot holes in it. There's a stupid gag where the bandages on a mummy that are falling off are mistaken for toilet paper inside a toilet. I mean, you know, that would be thrown out of the two Ronnies 40 years ago as a thing. But I think the ending's quite good. I'm not, I know that the final page is silly, but the ending, the way Dredd knocks off this, you know, spoiler, Dredd triumphs. The way because he's fighting this creature who is immortal, and the way he does it is actually quite innovative. Mm. And like I say, the design, Dermot Power is literally knocking it for six on every page. Yeah, so I don't have the problem that a lot of people do. And if it were me doing the epics, I mean, it wouldn't be in the top 10. It wouldn't be in the top 20, but it wouldn't be number 57 on Alex's
list.
Yeah,
I mean, I would say Dermot Power, as you say, is fantastic, and the page, the full page splash of the ship approaching the city of Luxor,
yeah,
which looks almost like it could be on Mars.
Yes,
but that's a wonderful page. It's almost a Grail page.
Well, I mean, how many episodes did it run? It got it in the back of the book. It got 2 covers.
Yeah,
both with the Egyptian judges bossing it. It's something, right?
It is something. Part 8, I think, is the last part. It's a Book of the Dead, Part 8. I also did like. I must like the sort of continual Captain Scarlet. Every episode ends with Dredd in a trap, and in the next episode, he's got to get out of the trap.
Yes.
There is a certain Dermot Power doing those end titles of Captain Scarlet. We know Grant Morrison and Mark Miller, as a writing pair, just liked making each other laugh, didn't they? And they put in all the gags in here, particularly, you know, building up to, as you say, another almost two Ronnies gag about the Egyptian or the Luxor judge who's been sent to Megacity One. Sent to Megacity One. Okay, and it's a story with problems. Dredd throws his weight around again, as usual.
Mm.
Yeah, all right. Let's get to, if you're all right, we'll move on and we'll talk about two of possibly the most interesting stories in the collection. Mm. We'll start with Gulag from 2004. Progs 1382 to 1386, Gordon Rennie, Charlie Adlard with Chris Blythe covers. Just describe the setup for us. What's this one about?
This is dread getting blood on his knuckles. I mean, you know what? This is a great, especially compared to the next Gordon Rennie story, this is a really simple, straight arrow of a story. There is an inciting incident on page 3. We see a human who has left a message that he knows is going to be seen by Mega City One, and it identifies him as a judge of Mega City One. He's being chased through the snow and killed through the snow by Soviet judges. So there's something. It's so the inciting incident takes place early. Chief Judge Hershey convenes a quorum of judges. "We got to go on a mission," she says. "It's clandestine." Dredd puts a team together. He goes in to kick some ass. It looks like it's all going wrong. There is a bit of Deus Ex Machina, and the story wraps. Dead simple storytelling, but beautifully done. I mean, Dredd. So yeah, it's a mission behind the Iron Curtain. Still, these pesky Soviets. It's like whack-a-mole with these guys. You know, they won't go away. So yeah, there are. It turns out that there were some prisoner exchanges at the end of the Apocalypse War, but it turns out that there are still some MIA judges, and we've just received proof of this. So Dredd goes in, right, I want to go in and investigate. And he puts a team together. And what I like about this is Gordon Rennie didn't invent the Judge Karen character, but I think it was actually Mark Morrison invented Karen, because Anderson at this point was off in space. So, Alan was playing with her. So we needed another goofy, you know, good looking female side judge. And I forget who created. Yeah. So it's Morrison created her. And then Rennie at this point, this is the first time he does it. He picks her up and he kind of runs with Karen for about 4 stories until that story where she goes Descent, the Pooh Cook drew, where she goes into the Undercity. So yeah, Dredd puts a team together, and Judge Karen's on it, and Judge Guthrie's on it. I mean, it's like the greatest hits of Dredd. There's a Judge Ox from the Apocalypse War. They go back in, and hey, Karen gets a couple of great moments. Ox gets a couple of great moments. One of the greatest lines that Rennie's ever written. You know, Guthrie gets some great moments, and they're all in character. And then at the end, Gordon Rennie introduces this new character. Are we allowed to say who he is?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is the introduction of this character.
Yeah. So the Judge Kazan clone.
Anatoly Kazan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he gets in there and...
first scene in this story, and playing chess, which of course becomes a thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, that's what Russians do. They drink borscht soup and they play chess. Yeah, so yeah, there you go. So you know, we've got him picking up, you know, the minor character of Karen and running with her, and yeah, he put together 4 really good Karen stories. And then yes, he introduces this Anatoly Kazan, who was with us for a long, long time.
Mm.
And you know, really threaded through. He's in the next story. Yeah, so great stuff. Artwork by Charlie Adlard, who rocks it. There's a great cover in the back of the collection by Adlard.
Prog 1385.
Yeah.
By Charlie Adlard and Chris Blythe. This is Snowsuit Dredd and
yeah.
Team and Karen. Yeah, it's that famous snowsuit judge uniform.
Can't get enough of that.
No, you can't. When you've got a variety of different costumes, a bit like Night Owl in his outfit. Owl, yeah, he's got the snowsuit. You've mentioned Dredd putting together a team for a mission is... we love that. I mean, it's so fantastic, isn't
yeah.
it? And you see him still going about his street duties, but while he's doing it, he's recruiting various people, or he's turning down various
people. Yes.
Great stuff. We've got Snowsuit Dredd. I like that. I got a question about this story, which is... when does Dredd know it's a trap? Because I'm giving it away slightly.
Yeah.
They've gone to rescue captured megacity judges from Sov, you know, the Sov judges. Spoilers, it's a trap.
Yeah.
When do you think Dredd knows that?
Dredd being Dredd, a man who is phenomenally good as a tactician, famously terrible as a strategist, could have known all along and didn't care. But I think, I mean, the obvious answer is when they go into the prison hut in the middle of Siberia and it's empty. But I think he probably had a 25% inkling it was a trap, but he thought, what the hell? And you know what? Yes, it's a trap, but, and the mission is sort of, could be considered a failure on many fronts, but in getting out of the trap, they do uncover an interesting bit of evidence that makes it maybe not all worthwhile, but interesting. When does he realize it's a trap? Not quite sure, but I would say, I'd say maybe he knew it from the start, but didn't care and thought it was worth the risk.
I mean, I think apart from maybe Atlantis, this is my favorite story in the collection.
Me too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great story. I think Charlie Adlard's art is possibly my favorite Charlie Adlard art that I've seen. And
he's really well served by the colors.
Really well served by that great cover. It's always fun when you get to do a different outfit for them, which I think is really good. Introduces this interesting character of Anatoly Kazan. It's just, Dread on a Mission with a team.
Yeah.
You know, it's wonderful stuff. So this one's great. I really enjoy this.
Yeah,
I really like this bit going beyond the walls and so on. And we will be coming back to some of those pages, I think, shortly. And then at the end of the book, we've got 2006 from the magazine, magazine 246 to 249, Regime Change by Gordon Rennie again. Inaki Miranda doing the artwork. This one is this the longest story in the collection?
So
feels like.
How many? So we're looking at...
Because the stories are obviously longer in the magazine.
Yeah, right? 10 pages, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yeah, so this is 40 pages. I don't know, maybe Emerald Isle might be knocking on the door.
This is an unusual situation for Dredd to be in.
Hmm.
I mean, again, let's just... If you could just describe the setup, what's Dredd's mission this time?
I don't know whether we can say that because we don't know. So this takes place in one of the same cities that we discussed in the last collection. This is, it's never referred to, I don't think, as Banana City, but this is Ciudad Barranquilla, which is confusingly not, I think somebody made a mistake on the map, but and then just led with a mistake, not on the site of the city of Barranquilla that we know today, which is on the Caribbean coast of Colombia. This is, I think, on the site of Buenos Aires, strangely. So there is a tottering dictatorship in Banana City, and a coalition of forces from Mega City is sent down there to keep the peace. But is that really what everybody's doing? And there's different factions. So obviously we are, because, you know, we're following Dredd. Dredd is the main focus here. And Dredd and Judge Hershey, who's behind it, their mission actually changes two times in the story. There's Chinese judges involved, Sino-Sit judges. There are Sov bloc judges involved. There are Euro-Sit judges involved. There's Brit-Sit judges involved, who all may have competing and indeed changing priorities and agenda in here. And then inside of that, there are two factions that also change and are fluid, trying to get into the catbird seat of running Banana City. Famously, you buy your way in to the biggest gang in town, which is the judges in Banana City. And you know, I guess the biggest mafia boss becomes the chief judge. So yes, it's a straight story. You'd think it's a straight story of there's an unstable city within the remit of or close to Mega City One, and because the Sovs and the Sino-Sit guys are flexing their muscles, Hershey decides that we can't let them. This is Monroe Doctrine, right? We can't let them come into our hemisphere. But then beyond that, there is another mission that is not revealed. It's a very complex story without being complicated. It's easy to follow, but there is, I mean, Rennie is spinning a lot of plates here. And it really keeps you guessing until the very, very end. Until maybe the penultimate page, you kind of, yeah, there's a sort of coda back in Mega City One. But yeah, until the sort of fourth last page, what the hell's going on? It's really good.
It's called Regime Change. It's 2006, by which time, of course, coalition forces were in Iraq and Afghanistan, I guess. Yes. I don't think it's any coincidence that he's called this story Regime Change, yeah. Is it?
But you say that, but yes, and I don't claim to know Gordon Rennie's politics. And yeah, you'd think Regime Change, 2006, I think Fallujah had been 2005. There was still, the surge took place, I think, in 2007. It's called Regime Change. There are troops in Iraq. We know the general politics of 2000 AD. So you'd think we could predict the story. And I think a worse writer, a less sophisticated writer than Gordon Rennie, might just go with a student politics story. But, I mean, Rennie manages, I've got a page open here where Judge Dredd decides almost unilaterally to bomb a residential neighborhood. And it's told from the point of view, or it's seen from the point of view of three children who are no older than nine playing in a courtyard. Oh, what's that? What's that fast moving, pretty, shiny object moving towards us? Bam, the whole thing goes down. Think about 2,000 casualties. And you think this is horrendous. But then two pages later, Dredd justifies it. And you're scratching your head thinking, oh, that's the trolley dilemma. Knock out 1,000 to save 10 million. Huh. I didn't think I'd be thinking that two pages later.
I'll see them bomb children.
So it's a really interesting story. Really, really nicely told. Yeah, complex. I mean, yeah. So all of the aspects that I said there, and then it's told in a fractured narrative. We open 3 days in, and then we immediately go back to what's the thing? You know, three days earlier. You know, so it's really complex storytelling. But he sticks to landing. It's great.
A note about Inaki Miranda's art. This is monstrously huge Dredd.
Yeah, so, he's auditioning for a WWE tag team spot.
Yes, absolutely vast Dredd depicted, often with low camera angles, so he is dominating the panel. Fantastic, very polished artwork, very, very nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it takes a bit of getting used to, and it's sort of, I think it's slightly ridiculous, which is odd because... And comical. The page I always see reproduced with a sort of, you know, a raised eyebrow is the third page with Judge Dredd doing a sort of, you know, the worst gurning imaginable. And yeah, he is huge. He's like, he's as big as a Mechanismo unit.
Yeah.
And it's odd because around this time, maybe a little bit later, there is a story in the aftermath of Day of Chaos called Cypher, two-parter, which is art by Inaki Miranda, color by Eva de la Cruz. So the same two collaborators here, and it is very different. It's just straight.
Right.
Whereas this is, most of the Banana City guys have got, you know, pantomime villain moustaches.
Yes. Yes, odd facial hair.
Yeah, very, very weird. Yeah. It takes a bit of getting used to, but once you got beyond that, it's pretty great.
Quick mention that Judge Hershey is chief judge at this time.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention in Story Gulag, of course, we also get a classic Dredd thing, which I just wanted to mention and ask you about, which is Dredd threatening to hand his badge in to a chief judge.
And getting slapped for it.
How many times has he done that?
Yeah, we've discussed this before. How many times is it? Four?
Yeah.
At least four. How many times has he done it to Hershey?
Yeah.
Four, I think.
Yeah. It's great in this one that Gordon Rennie does, as you say, Hershey slaps back. And,
yeah.
You do that to me again. And
I'll be there to see you on the long walk.
Yes.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay. So we've got these five stories in this collection. We've got, we are beyond Mega City 1. What do we learn about Dredd from this collection? And also, what do we learn about some of the young guns who moved into writing after John Wagner stepped away for a while?
Well, how did you put it in the notes that you sent me? You got, kind of gave me a bit of a loaded question. Do you think they got Dredd's voice right? Brackets. What?
Well, that was the question I put. Was like, yeah. Did you miss Wagner's ear for Dredd's dialogue in the stories that he doesn't write in this collection? Which I, like I say, loaded question. I did.
Yeah.
Miss.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's just. I mean, I get, once again, Garth Ennis has admitted this himself. He was in awe of Dredd. He just sees Dredd as Dirty Harry, gruff, a man of few words. And get the hell out of my way. Let me solve it. So that's kind of what you get in the second story, Emerald Isle. I think Miller and Morrison just, I mean, I reread the story with that note in mind, and just listening to Dredd's dialogue, it's kind of terrible and cheesy. Come closer if you think you can do that. I'll smash you in the face. Hey, eat this, meeple. There's a lot of that. Like, God, that would be, that's your first draft. I would hope that'd be polished.
Yeah,
like,
it is. The Book of the Dead is the most, it's Dredd just smashing faces, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you and I have discussed now on several years, Dredd is more complex and interesting than just smash you in the face.
Yes.
Yeah, complexion, I'll smash you in the face. In this book, I think we get to see, as you said right at the start, we get to see some other incarnation or some other facets of Dredd's character. You know, Detective Dredd, political warmonger Dredd is an unusual one.
Yeah.
But Dredd on a mission is a great one.
Mm.
I think Book of the Dead, for me, I did have the problem, which was it's just, I'll smash your face in, Dre.
It's almost like American superhero comics when two equal bad guys, Red Hulk and Green Hulk, face off. You know, they're just at the end of the day, you're sending it for the violence. Whereas, I mean, again, I've just got a page open here in Gulag. Dredd's recruiting the team. Rico turns up, and in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 panels, Rico turns up. Hey, put me on the team. And before you even get the line of dialogue from Rico, Dredd's dismissed him. No, you're not going. Why? Is it because of the bloodline that if we both die, the bloodline's out? Dredd doesn't even respond to that. And then, hey, we're pulling in Law here. I've looked up the records. By my age, you had already been on three missions outside of the walls of the mega city. Don't care. That was difficult. I also almost died on those two.
Yeah, I died on that one.
Yeah. So this is him, and I'm thinking, which one is that? Starborn thing and the hot dog run? Cursed Earth. Exactly. So he's done that. So I really think that's in keeping with classic Alan and John era. Once again, the dialogue at the end when the judges get back to Mega City 1 and basically Dredd is debriefing. I think he nails the dialogue there. And then, in Gulag, there's a couple of times. So Dredd has a run-in with a. Well, once again, she's an interesting character. There's a character that used to be a Eurosid judge, and she's now a peacekeeper. And then at the end of the story, she changes her role again, working for some kind of charity. And she's the sort of Greek chorus, I suppose, through the story. And he keeps interacting with her. Really interesting. And then, like I said, there's kind of a B plot that's hidden, where there's a group of Mega City tech judges that are down there looking for something, and Dredd keeps checking in on them. And I think Rennie nails the dialogue in that situation. When Dredd is speaking to the gang leaders, it's a little bit more thuggy, but I guess that's That's the only language, they understand.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think Rennie gets the dialogue, whereas neither Morrison nor Miller, nor I don't think Ennis in this, you know, in this story get. So yeah.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, obviously we both tipped our hand that Gulag is our favourite story.
Mm.
And I think Gordon Rennie gets Dredd best in that story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Morrison and Miller, I think, were just trying to make each other laugh.
Yeah.
Garth Ennis, as you say, probably, well, he was writing other stuff better than that, but even though Emerald Isle is the classic. Now, here's a question, which I'll try and see if I can work out. We know in the world of Mega City 1, the judges evolve because of problems with their law system, law and order, bad Bob Booth, and all that, and the judges respond. In our real world, America, one of the superpower America, one of the biggest things it has given to the world is its popular culture.
Hmm.
And obviously comics historians will argue about what was the first sequential art story and where it is European or whatever. But anyway, I think comics as we know it is sort of, they came from America. What I find interesting is that in the world of Dredd, when he visits all these other countries, they've all developed a judicial system which is based on what happened in Mega City 1 in a way.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Brendan McCarthy's fault because, as you say, doing that original star scan of judges around the world.
But even down to the fact that everybody wears knee pads, big shoulder pads, and helmets.
Yes.
Yeah.
They all wear judicial helmets of some description, which is great. Fun for the artist to design, you know, different helmets.
Mm.
I just think it's interesting whether this is a reflection that I'm making up between the real world of the infectious nature of American culture and in the Dredd's world, the infectious nature of their judicial system.
Yeah, very interesting.
You know, that the rest of the world... Because obviously, in a way, it's a post-nuclear Holocaust world. You know, there has been nuclear war of some description, hasn't it?
Yeah, and maybe, this is the only way. This is the only way you got to go. This is the formula that works. Just jump in. You got to make a decision now. It's you know, hardcore armed police on the street in basically SWAT 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Murphyville, Oz, you know.
Brexit. I just think it's interesting that, you know, the judicial design, the judicial system, Dredd's judicial system has spread around the world, basically.
Yes, very interesting.
So he goes to all these countries and they have something that is similar to Mega City 1, but of course, it's got a regional flavor,
which is,
you know, we love, the artists love it as well. I don't know, I might have to work on that idea and see what I come up with. I might have to talk to Alex Frith or Richard Sheaf as well as yourself and see if I can work it up into something. Okay, so let's go back through the stories. Like I said, Gulag, I think, is my favourite story.
Yeah, me too.
Although Atlantis is a close second, just for that early Detective Dredd in black and white. Worst story? I'm going to say Book of the Dead. Are you going to...
There's
Emerald Isle to choose from, I suppose, isn't there?
Yeah, I would agree with you. Book of the Dead.
Yeah.
Is number 5 out of 5. But back to my original point, I don't think it's quite as terrible as everybody else.
Right.
So maybe you should all give it a second chance.
Okay, try Book of the Dead again. And look out for copies of the Judge Dredd Mega Collection 56 Beyond Mega City 1. I got my on eBay a month or so ago when you suggested it, and it was pretty easy to find. The copies are out there. We talked about, obviously, last year we did Judges Going Bad, which, you know, today we've been able to see some wonderful Will Simpson original art from that. We've talked about Brothers of the Blood, Fink, Angel, Legacy. I'm curious, you know, you don't have to pick it now, but I'm curious as to what eclectic collection of Dredd stories we might be going to next year.
I've got it.
You've got it already.
If you want me to tell you, I'll
save that. Yeah. But, We'll talk about
it. I've got it. It's another one of these mega collections, and there are all good stories. Well, mostly good stories with one really problematic, weird story inside it that I'm desperate to get your take on.
Oh, thanks, Anton. Great. I look forward to that. Okay, so before I ask you about Grail pages from this volume, let's say, what else do we got? We got a Mike Mulcher short essay in the back about Beyond the World of Dread. We've got an introduction by Matt Smith that does similar and talks about that. We've got the covers from the prog and the magazine that went with these stories, which are, some of them are great fun. Yeah, okay. So anything else you wanted to say about this collection or the depictions of Dredd and his world before we go on to look at the artwork?
I think I said everything other than, just to restate that Gordon Rennie writes one story straight and one story really crooked, and he does a really good job in both.
And Anatoly Kazan, his chessboard turn up.
Yeah.
Okay, right, artwork. So I limited you because you can't choose the ones that we picked from Emerald Isle, but I think actually we're all right because I think we're going to be looking at another story, aren't we?
Yes, indeed. So one of my two Grail pages, it's very, very, very difficult to get better than the first page of Gulag, which is told without dialogue. Four panels. A man running away in a snowstorm, close up to his frightened face, looking over his shoulder. What does he see? Some kind of shapeless blob, also in the snowstorm. Snowstorm clears. It's three Sov judges in their Arctic outfits, only just restraining two very vicious-looking hounds that are after this guy. Great. Dialogueless, immediate peril, immediate terror. Great stuff. The dogs look amazing. The Soviets. I mean, has a Soviet judge ever smiled? No.
That is Charlie Adlard. It is Chris Blythe colours. It is, as you say, a magnificent piece of storytelling, wordless. In fact, those first three pages of Gulag, a series of sort of horizontal panels, which finally ends up with us pulling out through a megacity satellite and then into the Hall of Justice, where we finally get a speech bubble in the last panel of three pages.
Yeah.
I have to say, Gordon Rennie, Charlie Adlard, Chris Blythe, hats off to you, because the storytelling on that is just fantastic. But yeah, we will give you that. It is a great page. I will post that on the socials when this episode comes out. What else have we got?
So at the risk of it being a spoiler, I love the final page of Atlantis. So this is Dakota, Chief Judge Armour. Sorry, not Chief Judge. Britsit Armour, Judge and Dredd have cracked the case. And they're just in the apartment of these two killers. It leads with an amazing bit of narration inside one of McCarthy's lovely eagle bubbles. There's a bit of weird McCarthy judge headwear. The posing of, so Armour is sitting on the antagonist's sofa with one knee over another, as if he's got a cup of tea on his right hand. So he should have had a cup of tea on the arm of the sofa. And then there's Dredd, it's like these guys are on leave. They're really kicking back. Dredd is just leaning over the back of the thing, just sort of chatting to Judge Armour. And then you get a couple more panels and Judge Dredd delivers, a pithy one-liner, and then we're out, the end. Great stuff. I mean, from the first ever book I picked, I love judges just mooching around a room.
Sofa Dredd. Dredd on a sofa.
Yeah.
You don't often see that.
Do not? No. But yeah, Dredd, it's just nice because you really kind of get the feeling that Dredd and Armour get on very well, and Dredd wouldn't be upset with another assignment on Atlantis. Hey, there's another murder. Can you solve it? Yeah.
Great stuff. There's a tech judge in there. I was talking to Matt Ellis about this because he says the great thing about tech judges is that the artists can do what they like, whatever gadgets or bits and pieces they're wearing as headgear. Dredd on the sofa, Armour sitting on the sofa. I'm going to spoil the last panel because it got the great one-liner about from Dredd, about where he says, "Yeah, love, there ought to be a law against it." Again, we've been in a panel room with John Wagner this afternoon. You sort of feel John Wagner might have written that.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah, I don't think that's an Alan Grant line.
It feels John Wagner, doesn't it? Yeah. Love, there ought to be a law against it. Okay, so you've got a Brendan McCarthy page and a Charlie Adlard and Chris Blythe page. You've left me an open goal. Were you going to pick a cover? Or
that's it.
Well, in that case, I will take Charlie Adlard's cover to Prog 1385, Dredd and his team in their snowsuits, Judge Karen. It's just, yeah, great stuff. I love that story. It was so good. Dredd putting together a team.
Yeah.
Going on a mission, realizing it's a trap, getting out of there. Introduction of a couple of interesting characters and Dredd threatening to throw her hand in his badge again.
Standard.
Yeah. Standard. And Hershey taking no nonsense from him. And I'm fascinating. What a, you know, interesting collection, Giles. And I look forward to the next one. Great stuff. So, guest projects. We are at Enniskillen, which we're going to talk about in just a moment. I would say that there's one guest project, which is, since the last time we spoke, you've had two cadet additions to the Wright household in Dubai, which must be keeping you busy, John.
Yes. Extraordinarily, my wife has let me leave her, abandon her for 4 days, 5 days, to come to Enniskillen and leave her with two 10-month-olds.
Yes, 10-month-old twins.
Cadets, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's it. I mean, this is what I'm figuring. I've got 4 more years and then they're in the academy.
Right.
I said, done.
Oh.
Yes, but they are, yeah, they're lovely. They were born last summer, and after 3 months, they're sleeping through the night, and they're both good eaters and very jolly kids. So I'm blessed that they're, as I understand it, some kids can be very difficult to work with. I know I wasn't. I know I was a delight when I was a kid, a baby. So yeah, I guess the I don't know. That's the DNA has popped through. But yeah, there you go. So the lovely Mariana is in Dubai looking after
the twin,
the nippers,
the cadets. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
So here we are at Enniskillen, which we saw. For me, it was a reasonably late decision to come and for us to get together and record, but it worked out perfectly. The first day is finished. What did you make of, because I think it's your first time here at Enniskillen.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Paul Trimble's festival, Comic Fest here in Enniskillen. Who have you seen? What did you make of it? Or what have you got?
Yes. So, you know, because we've recorded a couple of years in a row, I've been to Lawless two times, and which is a very sort of small, intimate con in a very nice city with a lot of big names, especially if you're into British comics and 2000 AD. And everybody's very accessible in Lawless. Everybody's friendly. And all of the creators are very friendly and accessible. And everybody else that you meet at the bar and you meet around and about are lovely. And Enniskillen is much the same vibe with, and it's, if anything, it's even more accessible. I mean, okay, so here we are. We're sitting in the lovely town of Enniskillen, which I looked up on Wikipedia has the last time it was censored, had a census, the population was 14,500 people. It's a small place. It's also on the ragged edge of the European continent. Mm. I mean, we are on the western edge of the west of the island of Ireland. I mean, you know, you carry on, you cross the border into Donegal, and then next stop, Labrador, right? Next stop is the Canadian coast. I mean, there is a town like Enniskillen has no business hosting a Comic-Con where megastars like Gerry Finlay Day and John Wagner and Garth Ennis and Dan Cornwell and Alan Hebden and should be here. It's ridiculous. This is a very, very small, humble town. And yet, through almost dread-like force of will, Paul Trimble has put this thing together and assembled just the most sensational collection of artists and writers this year is the 50th anniversary of a battle, and I know Paul is the biggest battle fan in the known world. And so he's put together the original team. So there was that panel that we were at today. Had Jerry Finley Day and Alan Hedden and Dave Hunt and Steve McManus and John Wagner and Mike Dory, you know, all these original guys who were contributing 50 years ago to this amazing comic that's, you know, still in one way or another extant. And beyond that, it's a free entry. The rooms, so there's a trader room, so it's a little bit like in the skin, and there's a main room for the artists. There's a trader room, which has got a few artists in there as well. And then there is a room for talks and the panel. And then there is another room, which is the Will Simpson room. He's in there displaying all his art. He's sitting on an island table in the middle, just with a cup of coffee and three pieces of cake, and holding court in there. It's just amazing. I mean, everybody is people selling art. It's people doing sketches. People couldn't be nicer. So everybody's got time to talk and will. And it's not just Michael Carroll talking your ear off. It's Paddy Goddard talking to you for 25 minutes. It's Dan Cornwall talking for 25 minutes. I think I went up and chatted to and got stuff signed by John Wagner 3 or 4 times, because there's nobody at John Wagner. I mean, there were big queues, and then, you know, I mean, an hour before we met to record this episode, he's just sitting on his own and twiddling his thumbs. And I went over there and chatted to him about some potentially amazing news vis-a-vis Spectre. Lovely vibe. Yeah, extraordinary stuff going on. What did I get? Well, it's broken. You and I joke that we stop each other buying original art. I can see over your shoulder there's a PJ Holden Chimpsky page. I got a sketch from Mike Dory. I got a sketch from Paddy Goddard. I got a sketch from PJ Holden. And I bought a load of stuff from Alan and John and a few other people. Ali Fell, who's great. I almost managed to get away. I was, you know, it was 4 p.m. Yeah. on the first day. And I'm only staying for one day. I'm back to Belfast tomorrow. But I almost got out without a page of original art. And then there were pound notes burning holes in my pocket. And I just had to give them to Dan Cornwall for an original Spectre page. So yes, there you go. You
bought a Spectre page from Dan Cornwall.
I bought his first Spectre page.
His very first page. Yeah. Made, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So amazing con. I'm really, really happy. Odds are I'll take my one UK trip next year will be Lawless, but God, I want to come back to Enniskillen. I love it.
Well, as we say, hats off to Paul Trimble, who puts together this amazing free convention. Yeah, it's wonderful. The people who are here, as you say, the accessibility, the chance to chat with them, great panels, opportunities to buy artwork. I've also got a Mike Dory sketch. I've got a Patrick Goddard sketch. I'm waiting on. I'm picking up from Laura Howell, the Beano artist, a sketch tomorrow. I'll say the PJ Holden page, which you've got Chimpsky on it and Dredd on it, £50.
Oof. Yeah. Really?
I know, which I think is extremely cheap.
Yeah.
For a page of original art. So I bought that. Yeah, as you say, pan notes do burn holes in the buckets and you want to buy.
Yeah.
We are, but yeah, so you and I do sort of egg each other on to either not buy or to buy pages of original art at these conventions. But anyway, so there we go. Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? It's just a wonderful
day. It couldn't be improved. Yeah. It's free. So the free thing, it sort of invites, whereas in Lawless, I think Sue Hadrill, who runs Lawless, kind of limits what she... I think theoretically there's a 400 person limit in Lawless, and I think Sue sells about, let's say, 350 tickets, which, and you know, people have bought tickets, it's £35 a day, and so you have to pre-plan, and it tends to be, you know, people who want to be there. Whereas the free thing is a combination of nutcases like me who fly over oceans to come, and you cross the sea to come, and more local fans, but also just people who can drift in off the street. So people with young kids who are looking for something to do on a Saturday or a Sunday. Hey, there's this Comic-Con, and it's lovely walking down the commercial streets of Enniskillen and seeing in the butcher shop, in the charity shop, in the cafe, in the pub window, posters for Enniskillen Comic Con. So it's, you know, you get, and then there's, you know, maybe locals or people who maybe live in Derry or maybe live in Belfast who are kind of into their comics. Oh, well, it's just 45 minutes down the road. It's free. Let's go in. So it's a different mix of people that come to here than come to Lawless. And I think it sort of it benefits the vibe in there, you know, that and especially when you got somebody super accessible like Laura, who's doing, you know, who's a Minnie the Minx artist at the Beano at present. She's doing character sketches for 20 quid, and loads of other artists will do sketches for you. I mean, Brian Talbot, he's here. Brian Talbot is doing for anybody who takes up one of his books, One Bad Rat or Luther Arkwright, unbidden, he will do a little head sketch inside the book. I mean, this is amazing for free. Yeah,
it's astonishing. And you say, really lovely to see families with kids in there having the comic experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw some very excited teens who were changing their lock screen to some artwork some artwork they just bought. Yeah, great stuff. It is fantastic. Hats off again to Paul. It's just had a great day. And we are probably going to head out and get something to eat. And then tonight in the pub, Michael Carroll is interviewing John Wagner and Jerry Finlay Day. We're hoping that we might be there with, as we would say in this country, maybe a scoop or two of
yeah.
stout.
Well, I saw they've got, well, last night we were in Blazing of the Hollow and they've got Kilkenny on tap. And I saw behind the bar, they've got my favourite Powers whiskey as well. So I shall be partaking.
Might be indulged. Giles, I hope we're going to be meeting up at Lawless next year.
Inshallah, yeah.
To do the next one and to talk about another Dread collection, I'm guessing.
I've made a rod for my own back now. Yeah. I mean, they have to be a grab bag of dreads, right?
Well,
what else can I do?
What else can we do? So thank you very much to Giles, and thank you for doing this recording here in this. We can hear the cathedral bells outside in the right in the heart of Enniskillen. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the invite.
And thank you to everyone for listening to Mega City Book Club. As ever, find the links at Mega City Book Club. Find us on nearly all the socials, including their Substack and, of course, the 2000 AD forums. Email me, mcbcpodcast@gmail.com, particularly if you want travel or accommodation recommendations for Enniskillen the next year. And until next time, when we're passing judgment on another great book from here in Enniskillen, it's goodbye from me and...
Hi, it's goodbye from me. Bye.